Have oil producers in Montana and North Dakota unwittingly become unofficial members of OPEC?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The oil producers cartel OPEC yesterday decided not to produce a drop less in oil. Today, the market reaction in the U.S. with the West Texas benchmark price down 5.9% in early trading, $69.36 a barrel at last check. The OPEC move is seen by some experts as a message to non-OPEC members that it's up to them to cut production if they're so worried about the falling price. Robert McNally is president of the energy markets consulting firm, the Rapidan Group.
We were thinking that OPEC might say, well, we're not going to cut now, but maybe we'll have a meeting in a couple months just to check. Instead, OPEC took the most severe form of a challenge to non-OPEC producers. They basically said, we are going to keep producing at the level we're at now next year, period.
Non-OPEC competition among those competitors are producers of shale oil in the United States. And with oil below $70 a barrel here, this really is going to hurt the economics of the domestic production.
Well, that's right. Shale oil, relative to other types of production, is relatively sensitive. It responds to price signals more so than other forms of production. That's because of the steep decline rates in shale wells. And that's what OPEC is counting on. They kind of make shale oil in the U.S. sort of like a forced member of OPEC, if you will. OPEC basically told the United States, you guys are effectively new members, and you're going to have to adjust your production to help balance the market. We will not do it all by ourselves.
Robert McNally is at the Rapidan Group. Mr. McNally, thank you for this.
You're very welcome.
Thanksgiving is usually the heaviest travel time of the year. This week, U.S. airlines expect to carry 24 million passengers. That's up 1.5% from last year. From Dallas, Lauren Silverman reports on an often overlooked tool that could help people avoid some travel nightmares.
A lot of people just don't know that social media can be such an amazing tool.
Brian Kelly is a frequent flyer mile ninja and founder of thepointsguy.com. He says people can turn to Twitter to upgrade seating, find lost luggage, or rebook flights. When he was traveling last New Year's Eve, his flight had a mechanical delay.
And I was in my seat on my phone getting rebooked via Twitter with the American Airlines team while passengers were trying to run off the plane to get reaccommodated first.
Kelly got the last seat on the next flight. Most U.S. airlines now have teams dedicated to helping customers via social media. Scott Sorensen works in Southwest's Listening Center in Dallas Love Field.
Comments, complaints, or questions. So, hey, my flight's delayed leaving this city. Am I going to make a connection in my next city?
Sorensen can often get back via direct message to the customer, sometimes in a matter of minutes. So if you're looking for a fast response, Sorensen and Kelly say start by looking up the Twitter handle for your airline. In Dallas, I'm Lauren Silverman for Marketplace.
I suspect that many of us would prefer us to randomly play a little more Miles Davis or something rather than listen to more about so-called Black Friday shopping. But we should talk about the safety of your credit and debit cards if you're using them today, this weekend, or on Monday, the day consumers are pressured to shop online. With more on that, let's turn to the host of our sibling program, Marketplace Tech, my colleague Ben Brock Johnson. Good morning, Ben.
Hi, David.
All right. So we're told it's okay to use the boss's computer to shop on this Monday. You think it's going to be a big one?
It is. Last year, 2013, Cyber Monday was the biggest online shopping day in the U.S. in history, right? $1.7 billion spent. So it's kind of a big deal, this online shopping day.
You know, but it is just about a year since, we would later learn, Target was getting its computers hacked and personal information and credit card and debit card stuff stolen on a colossal scale. You think this is going to scare off cyber shoppers?
I think a lot of people are concerned about this. We should note, of course, that the Target hacks, as we think of them, were actually point of sale hacks. They were happening inside brick and mortar stores. So in some ways, it's not happening online in the ways that we think it is. But people are concerned about this. I've seen some surveys that are estimating this year we're going to see a leveling off of cyber Cyber Monday. Part of that could be the simple fact that like physical retail stores, e-commerce sites are starting shopping deals earlier and earlier. A few surveys, though, have said people have increased fears about hacking. And so some of those fears are warranted. Zscaler is a company that measures online attacks. They say hacking attacks have grown steadily throughout November, just as online shopping transactions have grown.
Now, the retailers would have seen the same surveys. They've also seen the cost it's been to retailers like Home Depot and Target that have faced the hacking. I assume they're trying to harden the system.
Yeah, they are. One advantage that online retailers have, David, at least you know from some perspectives, is that they have had at least 10 years to make really strong security on their websites. It's a lot cheaper, right, to improve the security on your website than it is to go in and retrain all of your physical employees in physical stores and things like that. But another thing that we should remember is a lot of websites today will actually just be making sure that their site doesn't crash from traffic because they're offering some insane deal. So part of it is they're trying to improve the way their sites run. Watch out for that kind of thing.
All right. They don't want like this web 1.0 old school, the site is down because too many people are pinging it trying to buy the latest offer kind of stuff.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Ben Johnson is host of Marketplace Tech. Ben, thank you.
Thank you, David.
And George Lucas filmed part of the first Star Wars in the desert of Tunisia, but then the sand buried a lot of it. Today, the BBC's reporting on efforts to dig up the old Tunisian sets and patch them up to attract tourists. Some of the money's from the Tunisian government, some from online crowdsourcing. Now, if you can't get all the way to Tunisia, try the Golden Canyon hike in California's Death Valley. That's where Lucas filmed his hooded Jawas with the glowing eyes. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.